Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 24th, 2019. Happy Merry Christmas Eve to everyone. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, University of Illinois Police, cops' data activity in question, pleads not guilty to seven charges. This article is written by Julie Wirth and is based out of Urbana. A University of Illinois police officer charged with seven counts of official misconduct for allegedly using a police data system to find information about women will be back in court on January 16th. Gerald, that's J-E-R-A-L-D, Sandage, S-A-N-D-A-G-E, 48, pleaded not guilty to seven counts of official misconduct, a Class 3 felony, on Monday during his arraignment in Champaign County Circuit Court. Sandage, a U of I police officer for 12 years, turned himself in to authorities Friday evening at the Piatt County Jail in Monticello after a warrant was issued for his arrest that morning following an internal investigation by the U of I Police Department. He posted $25,000 in cash toward his $250,000 bond that night and was released from custody on Friday. The charges read by Associate Judge Adam Dill on Monday accused Sandage of using the law enforcement agency's data system, or LEADS, to look up information on five women and two men while he was on duty for no identifiable official reason, quote-unquote. In five of the cases, he used license plate numbers to find out information about the individuals. The issue is really that he was using it without a legitimate purpose, Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lozar said later. The infractions occurred between February 25, 2017 and January 30, 2018, the charges said. U of I Police said that Sandage had used his law enforcement databases or used their databases and security cameras to seek personal information about women at the U of I and off campus. That included photos of women that police suspected were taken without their consent, according to the U of I. Wearing a white shirt and tie, Sandage quietly answered, "Yes, sir," when Dill asked if he understood the charges. Each count carries a sentence ranging from probation to 2 to 5 years in the Department of Corrections. Authorities Monday declined to provide any more details about those targeted or whether they were connected. This is an ongoing investigation, and anyone with any information that may be relevant should contact the University of Illinois Police Department or Crime Stoppers, State's Attorney Julie Reitz said in an email Monday. Dill continued the $250,000 bond for Sandage set last week. A preliminary hearing was set for 1:30 p.m. January 16th for Sandage to appear with his attorney. The case resulted from an investigation into Sandage's conduct on and off duty, which is continuing, according to U of I police. Sandage was accused in September 2018 of sexually assaulting a woman off campus while he was off duty. Though no charges have resulted from that case, the U of I said. That case was referred to Illinois State Police for further investigation. Sandage was immediately relieved of his authority and placed on leave, and his access to law enforcement information and resources was revoked, the U of I said. He was later allowed to return to desk duty, with the investigation pending, though his access to law enforcement resources was not restored. In January, state police provided information to the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office, which requested a special prosecutor because Sandage was a recently active police officer. A judge appointed that appellate prosecutor's office to handle the case. Then in September of this year, a second woman reported that Sandage sexually assaulted her in 2012. Both victims declined to participate further in the investigation, according to the U of I, and no charges have been filed to date regarding either alleged assault. The next headline reads, Stories of the Season. No pout about it. Actually, before I go on, I wanted to say that I'm reading the front page of the newspaper, and for that last article, Cops Data Activity in Question, there's a picture, and underneath the caption it says, or the caption reads underneath the picture, Gerald Sandage turns away from Associate Judge Adam Dill after Sandage's arraignment on 7 counts of official misconduct at the Champaign County Courthouse in Urbana on Monday. So there's a picture of him in court, white shirt, bluish tie, and the judge is behind him. So now, next story. Stories of the season. No pout about it. And center picture on the front page is Jim Bean leads the Christmas Carolers Choir on Friday at Inman Place in downtown Champaign. So there's a man who looks like a rock star, and he has a Santa Claus outfit on, and he has different color holiday lights wrapped around his neck. He has tattoos on his hand, and a black leather belt wrapped around his waist, and black sunglasses. So he kind of looks like a Santa that's rocking out. And behind him are several people in like Christmas hats and just reading for music and singing. Carolers bring sweet relief to musician on the mend. This article is written by Anthony Zillis and is based out of Champaign. With a baggy Santa suit hanging off of his gaunt frame, Jim Bean danced around the homey front room at Inman Place, an independent living facility downtown, at times leaving the rest of the Christmas Carolers choir to dance and sing for people sitting in armchairs off to the side. Bean has fronted rock bands across the area for decades, performing to sell-out crowds with several local bands. In 1985, he opened for Blue Oyster Cult at a packed Virginia theater. His yearly tour around CU's retirement homes and assisted living facilities with the Christmas Carolers Choir, though, is more special than any of those performances. "My mother was killed a week before Christmas in 1996, he told the small crowd of retirees in between songs on Friday, "and I love to do this instead of sitting at home feeling sorry for myself." Sharon Kite, buried as Sharon Bean, was a doting and loving stay-at-home mom who was involved in every aspect of her two sons' lives, Bean said, from Cub Scouts to sports. In mid-December, 23 years ago, she was brutally murdered by her husband while she slept a week before Christmas. Her husband then committed suicide. Bean was guided through his mother's home an hour after the murder, and to this day he can't get the images out of his head. He's never been able to disassociate her death with the Christmas season. Already an alcoholic, Bean fell down a hole in the years after his mother's death. Each Christmas was the apex of his despair. "I celebrated by getting snockered," Bean said, "just really drunk." On Mother's Day in 2003, Bean decided to quit drinking. Still, he couldn't disassociate the holiday season with his mother's death. So in 2011, he decided to start a new tradition. He put out a call on Facebook for willing singers to entertain people at retirement homes, and several friends answered the call. "She loved the Christmas season, and caroling and carolers and all of that," he said. "So the idea that finally came to me, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be doing this time of year. Everybody knows that it's a children's holiday. And for the most part, we pay a lot of attention to making sure that our children and a lot of other people's children are well taken care of during the season. And there's another community out there. There's the elderly and the disabled that are sometimes maybe not thought about as much." As a fan of the local music scene, Kara Cochran knew of Bean, but she didn't know him personally when she saw the Facebook message and replied that she'd like to participate. Cochran hasn't sung on Bean's level, but as a hobbyist, she always felt confident in her abilities. On Friday, her voice rang out as loud and pure as anyone in the entire choir, and her solo drew applause. Each year, she makes it a point to come out to every performance, to the point where she puts other things on hold. "Being Bean's friend and seeing what he gets out of this, it makes you feel good," she said. "It just kind of gives you a mental check when you're busy and you're going to work, and the dog's got to go out, and you just stop and think and relish. So it really puts things in perspective." A lot of people have dementia, and their family members don't want to come and see them or are unable to. A lot of them don't even have visitors for Christmas. Bean estimates he and the Christmas Carolers Choir have sung at more than 100 homes in their 9 years of existence. They sing 15 songs at each and hand out lyric sheets to everyone in attendance so they can sing along. "We get people involved in our performances, and we hear from lots and lots of them that they enjoyed it a great, great deal," Bean said. "That's all about, again, somebody giving them attention. paying them some attention, making them feel special for one evening, and that they are special, and that they haven't been forgotten. All of that, I know, would make my mom very, very proud of me and very happy. Each year, the group sings its last carols on Christmas Eve at Swan Special Care Center, which cares for people with severe and profound intellectual disabilities, according to its website. They use donations to buy a stuffed animal to give each resident that day. To Bean, that's the most special day in a week, full of rewarding moments. At a performance last week, Bean and his choir noticed one man having a particularly good time. The man approached Bean afterwards when he was circling the room giving out hugs. He said he had 7 or 8 months to live. And he just told us how much he enjoyed us, and he was set on having as much fun as he could with the time he has left, or had left, Bean said. Those are the special moments that you don't know that are going to happen. Bean said he still knows that a wave of depression is headed his way as the weather gets colder and the Christmas time decorations go up. The mantra that time heals all wounds, he says, doesn't quite ring true to him. But Christmas is no longer solely associated with the worst moment of his life. It gives us a new meaning and a different meaning than it had, Bean said. It helps a great deal, and yeah, there's a different identity to what the holiday means to me now, because I look forward to what we're going to be doing, and I spend much less time, let's say, sitting around feeling sorry for myself or whatever. The next headline reads, Fatal House Fire in Champaign. Community rallies for stricken family. This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Champaign. The presents were pouring in Monday for the children who survived a deadly fire Saturday in Champaign. With a cutoff time of noon for gifts to arrive, the fire department lobby on South Randolph Street received a steady stream of them Monday morning. They came from the Bloomington Fire Department, from a city employee dropping off presents and a check with her two kids, and from a woman who brought by a basket full of gifts. It's incredible how many people have reached out to help this family, said Catherine Thompson. It was the Champaign police sergeant's idea that sparked the gestures of goodwill. She was called to the home at 9 Sherwood Terrace Sunday morning after a fire that night, the night before, killed 12-year-old Kezjania Edwards and 49-year-old Leslie Gill. There were family members there, and I went to the house to talk with whomever was there to get some information on the children who escaped, Thompson said. That's when she asked police officers and firefighters on site if they'd want to pitch in to buy Christmas gifts for the 9-year-old boy and 11-year-old girl who survived the fire. They said absolutely, Thompson said, and the word spread from there, in the community and beyond, after a Champaign fire post on social media. The departments will go shopping this morning for the boy, who likes race cars and video games, and the girl, a fan of LOL Surprise dolls. The local Red Cross met with family members Monday, and the donations will also go toward any necessities that were destroyed, Thompson said. The little boy lost all his possessions, she said. Also destroyed were all of the presents Mrs. Gill had bought, both for the two children as well as for other kids and grandkids. Sometime in the afternoon, we're going to deliver the presents to the family members as well as the gift cards, Thompson said. Mix 94.5 donated $1,000 as part of its annual Christmas Wish campaign. The Champaign Fire Department and unions raised $1,000. Bloomington Fire Department sent over another $200. The Urbana Fire Department donated some, too. It's incredible, Thompson said. I'm speechless as to how many people have been so kind and generous. Tonight, enjoy Vespers from Millikan University. It airs December 24th at 9 p.m. WILL-TV PBS. It's fun to listen to those Christmas carols around the holidays, so that will be on this evening. And now, our weather forecast for the next week. It should be a fairly warm one for this season. This is brought to us by Greg Soulier. The last name is spelled S-O-U-L-J-E. And his column on the weather front. A mild weather pattern will remain in place for the remainder of the week, especially across the central and eastern U.S. Daily maximum temperatures will be more than 20 degrees above normal across parts of the central and southern plains and the Midwest, with midweek, Christmas Day, reaching readings approaching the 70-degree mark as far north as the middle Mississippi Valley. Cooler air will overspread the west and eventually reach part of the nation's midsection. At week's end, a system will emerge from the southwest, delivering rain or snow to the central and southern plains. Today, 54 degrees, partly sunny and unseasonably mild with patches of fog early. It'll be a good travel day or travel night for Santa's sleigh with low winds. Wednesday, the high is 57, the low is 36, mostly cloudy with a sprinkle late. Thursday, the high is 58, the low is 45, mostly cloudy. Friday, the high is 50, the low is 36, mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of rain. And by Saturday, the high will be 49, the low is 38. Mostly cloudy, it will be mostly cloudy with a 60% chance of rain. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. Notes from the newsroom. Saturday's News Gazette will include a 24-page special section devoted to Illinois football's trip to the Red Box Bowl in California. The cover is an ode to the symbol of the program's revival, an orange-striped bowling ball, sporting a number that signifies the extra game allowed by a postseason invitation. Photo editor Robin Schultz, that's S-C-H-O-L-Z, caught up with old number 13 at the bowling alley inside the Illini's training facility. Also a reminder, we will not publish a print edition on Christmas Day. Breaking news will be funneled to newsgazette.com. And we're taking nominations for our second 70 over 70 class through January. Forms are available at our website and in the lobby at the News Gazette in downtown Champaign. And now, history. Area history. In 1919, by a vote of 328-3, voters approved building an addition to Columbia School in Champaign. Voters also approved issuing $40,000 in bonds to pay for the building. At the election, 332 people voted, 193 women, and 139 men. In 1969, the suburban four-party conversion eliminating 10-party telephone exchanges in the Muhammad Exchange was completed December 15th, well ahead of schedule, said A.D. Hills of the General Telephone Company. About 200 rural 10-party business and residential exchanges were converted to four parties or fewer. In 2004, the Salvation Army's annual Red Kettle holiday collection had ended, but an official said he still hoped the local fund drive would meet its $270,000 goal through mailed contributions the next month. As of then, the Salvation Army had collected $235,185 toward its goal in Champaign-Urbana, and donations received by mail would continue to be added through the end of January, Major John Turner said. Also in international history, today's highlight, on December 24, 1968, the Apollo 8 astronauts, orbiting the moon, read passages from the Old Testament, Book of Genesis, during a Christmas Eve telecast. Also on this date in 1809, legendary American frontiersman Christopher Kit Carson was born in Madison County, Kentucky. In 1814, the United States and Britain signed the Treaty of Ghent, that's G-H-E-N-T, which ended the War of 1812, following ratification by both the British Parliament and the U.S. Senate. In 1865, several veterans of the Confederate Army formed a private social club in Pulaski, Tennessee, that was the original version of the Ku Klux Klan. In 1913, 73 people, most of them children, died in a crush of panic after a false cry of fire during a Christmas party for striking minors and their families at the Italian Hall in Calumet, Michigan. In 1914, during World War I, impromptu Christmas truces began to take hold along parts of the Western Front between British and German soldiers. In 1943, President Franklin D. Roosevelt appointed General Dwight D. Eisenhower Supreme Commander of Allied Forces in Europe as part of Operation Overlord. In 1980, Americans remembered U.S. hostages in Iran by burning candles or shining lights for 417 seconds, 1 second for each day of captivity. In 1984, actor Peter Lawford, 61, died in Los Angeles. In 1990, actor Tom Cruise married his Days of Thunder co-star Nicole Kidman during a private ceremony at a Colorado ski resort. The marriage ended in 2001. And in 1992, President George H.W. Bush pardoned former Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger and five others in the Iran-Contra scandal. Red Box Bowl, alumni advice. Stay away from the Playboy Mansion. What would Illini past say to Illini present about the football program's first bowl trip in 5 years? Editor Jeff D'Alessio tracked down 70 famous formers whose words of wisdom will run here and much more online leading up to Monday's Red Box Bowl showdown with California. Or it just says with Cal. Muhammad Abdullah. 4-year starter, part of the 01 Big Ten title team. We too often look to the next year, possibilities at the next level and other endeavors. Stay in the moment and enjoy the game and experience. From Brad Hopkins, first round pick in 93 NFL draft, 2-time pro bowler. Bowl games are the reward for the months of hard work before and during the season. Approach every practice and the game like it's your last, because for that team and its players, it really is the last time you will ever play together again. Make a memory. Scott Kehoe, K-E-H-O-E, started every game on Mike White's 85-86 teams. Seniors go out winners. Underclassmen, use your extra practice time to get better. Also, stay away from the Playboy Mansion, as it brought bad luck during the 1984 Rose Bowl game. Good luck, men. Beat Cal. Tim Simpson. He was class of 91, an All-American guard who started a school record 48 games. There will be many things and people tugging for your time, so you need to choose wisely. Enjoy the experience, but always remember who and what you were representing. Mom or Dad, Champaign Urbana, and the thousands of others who have worn the orange and blue either via uniform in the trenches or a sweatshirt in the stands. Celebrate after the clock hits 0:00. At NewsGazette.com podcast, listen to what our Monday morning quarterbacks had to say on WDWS. To reach us, you can call 1-800-660-READ, R-E-A-D. Or you can dial 217-351-5252. The next headline reads, at UofI150.NewsGazette.com. Among the 1,967 former students and faculty members featured on our Geese College of Business-powered U of I at 150 and Beyond website, Cara, that's C-A-R-A, Maurizi, M-A-U-R-I-Z-I. Let's say Cara, sorry. Cara Maurizi, who teaches music, drama, and dance in Urbana schools. Know a U of I alum you'd like us to track down? We're taking requests at jeffdelessio@newsgazette.com. Back in her home state for all of one day, newly enrolled U of I grad student Cara Maurizi had already had it up to here with the crummy weather. I moved here from Norway in January of 1999, in a blizzard, she says. I was tempted to go back, because the weather was better there. Of course, things got markedly better in the next few weeks, months, and years that would follow for Maurizi, who'd go on to earn her master's in music education, then embark on a career as a teacher, composer, improviser, singer, and actor who'd put on and perform in acclaimed productions. It was a fellow U of I alum she'd met while in grad school who helped make one of Maurizi's most memorable on-stage moments happen. The person who made the strongest impact on me was someone who reached out to me after I finished grad school and was already teaching in Urbana schools, she says. I had been teaching music in public school for 3 years. In grad school, I sat next to a lovely woman in grad chorale. Her husband was directing a summer musical, and she reached out to me. She asked me to audition for his show because she remembered my voice. His name was James Zager, and he is still a theater professor, now in Wisconsin. I ended up getting cast as the female lead in a two-person musical called The Last 5 Years at Krannert Center for their summer series. It was one of the best theater experiences of my life and the first time I was ever paid to be an actor. I still look back on that as one of my prized memories at the University of Illinois. Today on WDWS 1400 AM, tune in for Morning Show from 5 to 9 AM. Before his trip to the Red Box Bowl, guest host Ed Bond will spin holiday hits while waxing poetic about the Illini. And on Penny for Your Thoughts, which airs from 9 to 11 a.m., it's 2 hours of Ann Roten's favorite Christmas tunes. To chime in, call 217-356-9397 or text 217-351-5357. Also on NewsGazette.com, Inside Illini Basketball with Scott Ritchie, college basketball beat writer. Bragging rights was concerning. There's still a lot of season left, mostly Big Ten, mostly top 50 teams, so Illinois has a lot of opportunity to get back on track. Whether they will is sort of the question, especially after Missouri had their way with them. For our entire menu, visit our website and click on Podcasts. The next headline reads, GCMS School Board, lower property taxes on the way. This article is based out of Gibson City and is written by Ross Brown for the Ford County Record. Gibson City Melvin Sibley School Board members approved the district's fiscal year 2020 property tax levy, which will result in a lower rate for the fourth year in a row. It levies $7.9 million on an equalized assessed valuation of $140.8 million. The levy includes $7.4 million in property taxes to be directed to regular funds in the district, plus $515,000 for bond and interest repayment. Amounts projected to be levied by fund are $5,071,213 for education, $704,335 for operations and maintenance, $281,734 for transportation, $70,434 working cash, $150,000 for municipal retirement, $100,000 for Social Security, $70,434 for fire prevention and safety, $900,000 tort immunity, $56,347 for special education, and $70,434 for leasing. The next headline reads, Rantoul City Schools, Superintendent's Deal Okayed. This article is written by Ryan Birch for the Rantoul Press and is based out of Rantoul. Rantoul City Schools Superintendent Michelle Ramages, that's R-A-M-A-G-E, Ramage's contract was extended for one year through 2022. The 26-year-old administrator began with the district in 2011 on an interim basis and was hired as superintendent in July of 2012 full-time after Bill Tranquina was unable to return due to health reasons. Her salary is $181,693. The board approved the additional year on her contract by a 7-0 vote following a 2-hour closed session. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been a reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 24th, 2019. I'll resume shortly with Part 2 of the News Gazette, so please stay with us. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas Eve and a wonderful holiday season. Thank you for listening. And I'll be back shortly. I hope you have a wonderful day.